Good question, because I don't have it in front of me, but yes, it should be W.
You go to WVOM?
VOMFM.
VOMFM. Then you go to Main Outdoors.
Main Outdoors.
Then you go to podcast.
That's correct. See, I don't get normally asked these questions.
I thought I'd surprise you. I got some more surprises
you
coming.
You did. I wonder how many more curveballs I'm going to get.
Well, we are also streaming live now, so I understand.
Yes, we do.
You know anything about that?
No. I would suspect you should go to the 103.7, yep. 103.9 website, and you should be able to hook up on their website.
Okay. Also, taking over for Norm, I told you, is Scotty Bates, and we're happy to have Scotty out there to look at once in a while. Hi, Scotty. Okay, let's go along, and the questions tonight is any question that you might have, that is, for our guests or whatever. As usual, you're welcome to call us at the number to call is, Norman?
1-800-966-1039. That's 800-966-1039, and as Bob says, you've got to dial all the numbers if you want to come and get the call into us.
Absolutely. If they're local, they've got to dial the whole thing. Okay, we go right along to Outdoor Digest. News of the week is brought to you by the Northwoods Sporting Journal. And number one on the agenda here is that huge 500-pound bear taken over bait in northern Maine this past week. And Norma, you want to give us an update on that?
Well, 500 pounds is a huge bear.
It certainly is.
I mean, when
it's not a record, I don't think.
When I went out there hunting bears, we were probably, I don't know, probably one of our biggest bear was probably somewhere around three and a quarter.
Yeah.
And even that took, you know, at least four people on the litter, if not more. So you can just imagine a 500-pounder. 500-pounder would be quite a bit more, you know.
Yeah, it would be a beauty.
Yeah, I like here where it says that he doesn't bait bears, but he feeds bears.
I thought that was quite interesting.
I'm looking at that and I'm going, wow, this guy is for real? I mean, it's like if you're feeding bears, you must be baiting.
I'd be awful careful feeding bears, right?
Yeah. But anyways, it was interesting when I read that he doesn't bait, but he just feeds. It's like,
I guess as the story goes on this particular bear, he shot it, and it was late in the evening and towards dark, and they followed it for a ways because it took off after he shot it. And they went to go and get some dogs, I understand. And the dog picked up the trail, and they were after 2 a.m. in the morning.
It's a long time.
Well, let's see, it gets dark now around 7-ish, 7:30, quarter past, like that.
Yeah, somewhere in that ballpark, sure.
And just see, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3, or 6, 7 hours there.
Yeah.
That's a lot of trailing.
Plus, you get that big beast to get out.
Oh, my gosh. 500 pounds. Imagine that. That's taking a hold of a leg and hauling on that.
Nice trophy, but hauling it out must have been some chore.
Have you ever downed a bear yourself?
Yes.
Have you?
Yeah, I've shot one.
One?
Three, 4 years ago.
Yeah. How would they eat? Pretty good. I mean, I've had really bear good meat, but it looks like it's kind of dark and kind of coarse, but it's quite tasty.
Very tasty. Yeah, I like it.
How do you cook it? Fry it up?
I tend to fry it up unless I've got a roast, and then, of course, I'll cook the roast, you know. But my preference is to just pan fry it.
Okay, I guess it's time for the fishing report tonight. And bring on the band, Scotty. You listening? Oh, there we go.
I'm the big boss bass.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
These are my reeds.
Yeah. Okay, this is coming up to you right now in a few minutes here from our fishing expert Norman Plord is going to give the fishing report tonight, and I'm going to help him along by asking him questions.
Fishing report?
Yes.
Now, you didn't mention this to me.
I didn't want to mention it to you because I'm going to I'm going to ask you questions that you can answer.
Oh, that's even better.
How are the Brooks right now? Are they high, low? Drought affected them a lot? Or?
Well, last time we were in the Brook was about a week and a half ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
Go to one of our favorite spots?
Yeah.
How'd you do?
Not good.
Not good.
Not good. It was very quiet. I mean, we managed to get our two trout.
Two trout?
Yeah, but that was it.
Two trout?
Well, two people fishing.
Well, one trout apiece.
Right.
Oh, I see. You came after the law was changed to one trout.
Yeah. So, I mean, we managed to do that, but I mean, it took a number of hours and it was very quiet.
Wow.
Pretty, though. I mean, it's a pretty time of the year to be on the stream.
Yeah.
And after that, we decided to go to bass and we did very well with bass.
Was the water low in the stream you were in?
It was fairly low. It's probably the lowest I've seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's a bow there that we have to normally, you know, squeeze underneath it, and we didn't have to. So, the water level must have easily been at least a foot, foot and a half.
You haven't been fishing for the northern pike?
No. I'm surprised we haven't done that this year. We normally do, but we haven't. But then the season's not over with yet. So I mean,
they run pretty good size, huh?
Yes, our biggest one was 37 inches.
Oh, 12
and a half pounds, and we couldn't resist having that one mounted. I mean,
I would think so. Yeah,
yeah. Alaska to Maine. Kevin Smith mounted it for us. Did a beautiful job. I mean, got this big pike coming up the surface.
Oh man,
mouth is open.
Oh man, they got a wicked mouth on them.
Oh, they do. But the mouth is open and it's looking to catch a 6-7 inch yellow perch.
So it
did a beautiful job.
You know, when I went to Labrador and fished in Snagamook Lake, it was full of those northern pikes up there. Every cove had a northern pike in it, and he was the ruler of the cove.
Well, I fished Petmoquin Reservoir in Quebec, and
that's where I was.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And
a different one in Labrador and one that you went to,
Yeah, huge, huge pike fishery. I mean, people will rent that outpost cabin, and you just read the wall, and they have all the size of fish that they catch, and it's some huge ones. We didn't catch any huge ones. I mean, they averaged somewhere around 4 or 5 pounds, the ones we were catching.
Yeah.
Great eating. But no, we've also been doing some bass fishing, smallmouth, and we've done very well with smallmouth bass.
Want to reveal where you've been going?
Not really.
Not really?
Well, I would, except for the fact that
your boy doesn't want to know. But nobody's fishing really right now. It's very quiet.
But they're all over the place. I mean,
yes, they are. They're everywhere.
And it's funny, you know, I talk to a lot of people, and they'll ask me if I eat the bass. I said, sure. And a lot of people I've met will not eat the bass, you know. And
it's quite sweet, the meat.
Very delicious. I mean, they ask about the worms, and I said, well, that's just extra protein.
My grandmother always said, you don't eat bass unless there's an hour in the month.
Yeah, yeah.
That was an old wives' tale from way back, I think.
Yeah, I figure, you know, if they're cooked, I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, they cook and kill all the worms.
I just don't pay attention to it, but it's very good eating. I mean, I tell people that, and also the pike. I mean, I'm surprised the number of people who will fish for pike but have never eaten pike. And I said, well, you ought to try it. It's really delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
So, no, that's pretty much it. We've been, you know, and it's been at least a week now that we haven't chased any bass. And I'm not sure when we're going to go next, but that's pretty much what we've been doing. It's been good.
Pretty good fishing overall. You guys.
Yeah, the bass fishing.
Nobody around, right?
No, very, very few. Well, first of all, this is a small pond. There's not a ton of people there, but even so.
Even the brooks and streams, there's nobody fishing. They won't fish if it's only one fish limit. They just won't.
That's correct. That's correct.
And they can't use worms.
Yeah.
It's live bait. They can't use it.
Yep.
So they just don't go.
Yep, that's
so
true.
So that leaves the purist, you might say, the fly fisherman, to have his chance.
Yeah.
But you used worms to catch those too, didn't you? Did you see any rises for trout?
No.
You didn't?
No. No, it was very quiet. It was very,
well,
very
I should
quiet.
Say so. We used to, I, you know, I've been to the place, of course, a few thousand years before you ever went there.
Right.
And we fished it right up until they closed it on the 15th of August.
Right.
And finally, after years of trying to get it through to extend the season, they finally did, but even Sam was against extending the season. The old timers, you know, figured, well, there's too near the trout spawning and all that.
Right.
And it's nowhere near when the trout spawn. The trout spawn usually in late October and early November.
Yeah, it's
sometimes maybe a week or two before that, but you're way before the trout spawn. But they're beautiful to look at.
They are.
In the fall, they take on these massive, beautiful colors.
Orange colors.
Especially the male, yeah.
Really pretty.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're pretty. And they're nice to catch and release on the fly because it doesn't do much damage to the fish.
Well, that's the beauty of fly fishing is you can catch and release so much easier. I mean, I grew up, it was called catch and cook.
Catch and cook. You know, in your family.
Yeah, because, I mean, the boys were going out to fish and we were providing subsistence to the household too.
Yeah.
And so whatever fish my father was catching on the weekend, whatever fish the boys are catching during the week, you know, we'd have a fish fry. And so throwing out a fish, the only reason to throw out a fish was because it wasn't legal.
Okay.
If it was legal, we didn't throw it out.
Another question I had for you, and I'm going to hold it till after the question of the week.
Okay.
Which will get the answer, correct answer, one of my hand-tied flies, maybe one of Norman's hand-tied flies. No, you're not tying right now, are you?
I'm not tying right now.
And you're not patting with them either, are you?
No.
No. We're going to talk about your flies a little later, I think. Well, I think that would be interesting. You tie some nice flies. You know when to use them, how to use them, and the right ones at the right time. I know because I've been with you and I've watched you and so on anyway, but I think that would be quite interesting. We'll get to that a little later in the show, but what is the question of the week?
Okay, the question of the week, I'm actually looking for a time frame because I couldn't find if there was an exact year, which I'm sure there was, but I just couldn't find it. So if you call the right decade, I'm willing to accept that answer. Anyways, it has to do with the St. John River watershed. And the question is when did the muskies first appear in our St. John River watershed? Again, the question, when did the muskies first appear in our St. John River watershed?
Okay, that's the question for tonight, folks. And it'll get you one of my hand-tied flies for the correct answer, and we'll take a break right here, Scotty. And we'll be back with a caller, I hope. And we're back with more of Maine Outdoors. This is Bob Lehman, your host tonight, in the stead of our usual host, which is traveling all over the West. And they have a question out there tonight, and the question was, Norman,
when did the muskies first appear in our St. John River watershed?
And do we have an answer?
Yes, we have Sean.
You're there, caller.
Yes.
And just your name and where you calling from?
My name is Sean, and I'm calling from Levant.
Levant, that's not too far from Bangor, is it?
No, it isn't.
Just down the road. Do you have an answer?
Well, I have a guess. How about that?
Okay, sure.
I'm gonna guess it was in the 1970s.
Norman, what do you think?
No, not the 70s.
No, sorry. Sorry, not the answer, but appreciate your call.
Yeah, like I said, it was purely a guess, so thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have another caller, Scotty?
Yes, we do.
Okay, are you there, Carl?
Hey, I'm here.
Yeah, what's your name and where are you calling from?
Yeah, I'm Dave. Actually, I'm calling from Worcester, Massachusetts.
No fooling.
Yeah.
Dave, from Worcester, Mass, you picking us up streaming?
Yep.
Are you really? Well, that's something else, isn't it? That's great. Sure. Best caller we've had on our streaming that we do now. And I guess it's only been a couple of weeks.
On the Voice of Maine app. I got the app.
Oh, nice.
Oh, well, great. That's wonderful. Did you have an answer to the question?
Well, I'm thinking 1987.
Norman says he's the expert on it. He knows. He looked it all up and read about it. And I'm sorry, David, that's awful nice to talk. I'm glad you picked it up on streaming. I think there's a lot of people out there. How do they do that?
Well, you just go to your app store and go to the search and put the Voice of Maine in, and you got it.
No kidding. Quick as that. Just like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I also want to tell you, I got a place up in Northeast Kerry.
No fooling. You don't.
Other than the Moosehead.
You don't fish Moosehead, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, do you? That's a surprise, huh?
You ever up there during the winter? You ever up there during the winter? Or?
No, I used to, but
Right up there at Northeast Kerry, little store they have there?
That's right. Yep.
They feed the deer, and we were through there one day on snowmobiles, and it's amazing at dusk how many deer will come out.
No fooling.
It's a nice sight to see. Oh, yeah.
Wow, I should say.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm counting maybe 30 deer at a time.
Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised, yeah.
They're getting some big trout up to Moosehead the last couple of years, aren't they?
Yeah, they're doing very good up there.
Have been any luck catching some of those?
Oh, here and there, yeah.
Here and there? Have any caught any big ones?
No big ones.
Well, if you call them 12, 14, 15 inches, a pretty good brookie, I think. But they are getting them 2 or 3 pounds, I guess, or even higher.
Yeah.
I know my son goes up to Roach River every, September. Takes a trailer right up there and fishes almost the whole month. And he can't keep a fish up there, but it's getting too well known now. And he's just awful busy, but they catch a lot of nice salmon, too, along brook trout.
That's a nice little area.
It is. The whole area is a beautiful place. Well, thank you for calling, David. Really appreciate it.
All right. Have a good day.
It's wonderful news on the streaming. First one we've heard of. Thank you. Have a nice night. Thank you so much for calling in. I got a little bit of old news here, Norman. It seems that last week we had a lady call in about that she thought that perhaps the ducks and the herons might well be stalking fish in some of these ponds. That, you remember that?
Okay, well, why don't we go ahead and just take that answer? Go ahead, caller.
Oh, we've got a caller here.
I'm going to say it was 2000.
Okay.
No, not then.
Still not right. Sorry.
Okay, thanks
anyway. And who is this, please? Who? What's your name and where are you calling from?
This is Lynn from Parkman.
Parkman? Where's Parkman? Yep. I've heard of that. Is that up by...
towards Greenville.
Munson?
Yep.
He's gone.
Dover, Foxcroft area, Parkman, Guilford.
Oh, yeah, right, sure. Yep. Yeah, I've been there. I've been all over the state. I used to sell seeds for 40 years and Hat Seed Company. I've been to Parkman and Guilford and Dover and you name it, I've been there. I can't remember all those towns that I've... I can remember the name, but I can't remember being there, but I have. Anyway... So anyway, this old new. Have we got any more callers, Scotty? No more callers. What was the question again?
The question is, when do the muskies first appear in our St. John River watershed?
Okay, that's the question. If anybody is, nobody's got the right answer so far. If you get within how close to when?
Within the decade.
Within the decade, and the decade is ten years.
Yeah.
10 years. So there could be somebody calling yet, and you've still got a free hand-tied flies floating around there for the answer to that question, and we've got a lot of other years out of the way, so they still might have a chance at it.
I think so.
The more guesses
I
come in, the better chance they have, right?
Sure.
but with old news here, this should be cleaned up. And Copal, they contacted the waterfowl specialist at the Maine Fish and Wildlife Service, and he talked to Danielle DiAria, and she said, that's an interesting nickname for it. I says, I do think it's possible for herons and other aquatic birds, or I suppose that would be what would include all species of ducks, to carry fish eggs to new waters. She really thinks that it's possible. There's also the potential for carrying unwanted vegetation, which could cause issues if it's non-native and invasive. Yeah. I haven't seen any quantification of this, but it makes sense to be capable of doing so.
So I really have a hard time. Oh, we got some more callers?
Oh, we got another caller.
Okay, go ahead, caller.
You there, caller?
Yes, sir.
Your name and where you calling from?
Frank from Machias.
Machias. What was your name again?
Frank.
Yep. Okay, Frank and Ernest?
Yeah, right.
Right. Well, Frank is Ernest. And do you have an answer?
Yes, that too.
You have an answer?
1950s.
No, not the 50s.
50s. No, we've gone. Have we gone? We haven't got there yet, or have we gone all around it?
I thought I'd give it a chance. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you for calling anyway.
And I think we have another caller, right?
We got another caller?
Okay,
you're there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Okay, dear. What's your name and where you calling from?
Sandra from Castine.
Oh, Sandy, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Castine.
According to the BDN, it said the Quebec fisheries stocked it in 70, but somebody guessed that. In the 80s, it said it turned up in the St. John's. So we've got the 50s, 70s, and 80s covered. How about the 60s?
It was the 60s. According to the article, a couple of articles I've read, the fish were, it was 60 years ago approximately that the fish were introduced in the headwaters of the St. John River over in Quebec. And for some strange reasons, I guess the biologists didn't think that the fish would find their way over into the U.S., but I guess nobody ever had as much as the fish
just, are, just across the river. You right. mean.
Well, as much as the fish are schooled, they yeah. weren't educated.
No,
in not crossing the border.
Yeah,
and so
right.
And then the fishery developed, according to this article, in the '60s in the Baker Lake.
Uh-huh.
Now they're throughout the St. John River watershed.
Oh, man, yeah. And they could get into the United States.
Well, they are in the States.
In the States already.
Oh, yeah. They're throughout the St. John River watershed all the way up through...
The halfway across there is part of the U.S.
Well, you can catch them up in Fort Kent, Madawaska, Van Buren.
Right off the shore.
Right in the St. John River.
Yeah, but I'm talking about waters that run into the St. John River from the USA.
Yeah.
Like Fish River...
Oh, okay. I'm pretty sure they are. I mean, I'd have to speak to people in my hometown if they've caught any in the Fish River, because the Fish River does dump into the St. John.
Mm-hmm.
The only hopes there, if it is in the Fish River, which I'd be surprised if they're not, the only thing that would stop them from getting into the Fish River chain would be hopefully the falls.
There's a big falls there.
Well, there's some falls of Fish River, the Fish River Falls, but they're not necessarily huge. So if you had a really good springtime with some heavy runoff,
they could do it, huh?
They might do it. So I think the jury is still out on that. I've heard through some people that they swear that they've seen some above Soldier Pond, but I haven't been able to confirm that.
That's not the only tributary that runs into the St. John from the U.S.?
No, I'm sure there are others.
Others. I know that they've been fishing some of those places.
Yep. But people who fish them, you know, they enjoy it, and
they had a tournament.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Well,
tournament.
What happened with Fort Kent is they saw the demise of the trout in the fish in the St. John River, and potentially the Fish River, and they said, "Well, if you can't beat them, join them." And they they started the muskie tournament, and they're doing very very well with it. Very well.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's all very interesting, I think. And you're still there, caller?
Sandy, you're still there?
You're still there? I guess she gave up. Well, I got to get it. Oh, maybe Scotty's getting her address.
It looks like Scotty's getting her
information. If he gets her address, we're all set. We're going to mail her out one of my hand-tied flies, and I will do that tomorrow. I got a whole bunch all tied up, and I'll have one ready to roll for you. And if you're still on the line? She's gone, Scotty.
Yeah, I've got her.
She's gone. She's got her address.
Yeah.
Good. Okay,
right.
That's great. You want to take a break right now, a hat break?
Yes, we should.
Okay. We'll do that right now. So there you go. There's the music. This is Bob Lehman, your host tonight on the Maine Outdoors Show. And we'll take a couple of minutes break, but stay with us. We'll be right back right after these few messages. And welcome back to the Maine Outdoors Show. Thank you for staying with us. And this is Bob Lehman again, and we're happy to have you with us tonight. And I guess by the time other things have gone by, and I'm checking my list of everything that I was going to say pretty much tonight, it's time for our guest. And Norman Plord has been on this show doing in the control room now for how many years, Norman?
I think it's at least probably 3.5 years.
Yeah.
I can't believe it's been that much.
Yeah. Well, we want to say hello to Jimmy Layton. He used to do it.
Jimmy.
He did it for many years. This show's been on the air for over 20 years.
For 20 years, yeah. See, I came on because Jim was really, really sick, bad.
Yeah.
And they were looking for somebody that could help out, and I just happened to have a background. And I did some DJ work when I was in college.
Did you?
Yeah. And then in my church, I run the sound system, and I've been doing
I know
for
you
years,
do the control room at the church a lot.
Yeah, so.
Been doing that for a long time.
Long, long time, 30 plus years.
Yeah, 30 years?
Over 30 years, yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, very serious.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Well, how come you're only 29?
But anyways, yeah, so I had that background, and so Diane asked me if I would do it. And I said, yeah, sure, why not, you know. And yeah. So I got a phone call from Paul in the afternoon saying, Norm, seriously? You want to do this?
One thing about Norman, you can count on Norman. If he says something, it's gold.
So know?
Very
yeah.
honest man, very helpful for everybody. He comes and does my garden in the spring. He rotates it for cat, won't take a nickel. And I can't do it anymore. I'm just not able. I don't have the means of doing it, so I just don't anymore. But he comes, and he's been doing it for the last couple, 3 years.
We really appreciate it.
Yeah. I can still plant some tomatoes and plant some cucumber seeds, so those are the main things for me.
Yeah.
I know you're quite the gardener. We'll talk about that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
But right now, I'd like to talk a little bit about your family.
Mm-hmm.
And how many, you was born in Fort Kent?
I was born in Fort Kent. Mm-hmm. And my wife's from Madawaska.
Uh-huh.
And basically, years ago, I was trained as a combat medic. I was trained as a combat medic and decided that probably going to Vietnam.
Yes, you've been in the service.
Right. Going to Vietnam was
and
probably.
And you were trained as what again?
Combat medic.
Combat medic.
Yeah.
You didn't see any combat, though.
No, because I realized if I stayed a combat medic, I would have seen a tour of duty in Vietnam, and I promised my father that if I could avoid it, I would. So I found a career in orthotics and prosthetics.
That was great.
I ended up pursuing that, and so I ended up getting hired by Eastern Maine Medical Center back in 1979.
That's so wow.
I spent 41 years with them.
41 years with Eastern Maine Medical.
Yeah.
Yep.
So today I'm retired and I fish and I garden.
And you garden.
Yeah, so.
We'll get to gardening a little later.
And I got a part-time job.
And you got a part-time, that's right. You do work, you keep it on working. You've got this fellow who, well, you do good work and they can count on you.
But
he's a jack of all trades.
But I believe we have a caller.
Well, we do have a caller.
Go ahead, caller.
You're there, caller, yes.
Hey, Bob, this is George. I'm the guy that called last week about the ducks transporting the fish.
Oh, yeah. George, where are you calling from?
Mount Vernon.
Mount Vernon. Okay.
Yep.
You're picking us up on the Rockland Station?
No, on the Augusta Station.
On the Augusta. Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep. 101.3.
Belgrade Lakes area.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so, sure. I got you. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's water everywhere here.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
We're not too far from the Kennebec either.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think it was in, like, March or April, I won one of your salesman books.
Oh.
I answered the present, and your question, it was about the 9-3 fly.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And I answered that. And you sent me a copy of the salesman angler, and you sent a little letter with it, and you said, give me a call sometime. Now, is that number that you put down, is that a cell phone number? The reason I want to know is because I have a little pond I dug last summer, and it went almost dry this last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And in the bottom, and around the edge of that pond, I saw a little dead hornpout, shiners, another little fish.
Oh, yeah. Just started
and
showing
it was,
up.
It's just in the woods. There's no flow into it. It's just it's just a little hole in the ground.
Huh.
But I thought if that was a cell phone, I could send you a copy. I mean, I could send you that picture on text.
Well, I have a cell phone. You could do that too. All you could do is look up my number. In the telephone directory.
Is that a cell phone?
No, that's not my cell phone number. Do you have to have that?
Yes, you do.
Yeah,
you
do, because what I would do is I'd text you the picture.
Okay. I see what you're getting at now.
And I think the number that book you gave me was a cell phone number.
Yeah, okay. Well, you have the number then.
So, yeah.
And what is it? Give me the first few letters.
I can't do that. I don't have it. I should have looked it up before.
Well, I'll give it to you on the air. I don't care. 207?
Yeah.
217?
Yeah.
2550.
Okay. All right. Do you have it with you? I'll send it to you right now.
That's fine. I don't have it with me. It's home, but it'll be there when I get there.
Oh, okay. Either way. I won't rush then, but I'll send you that picture.
And send me your Send me your number and we'll communicate.
Okay, I will. Well, you'll have it when I send you this.
Norman's got a question for you.
No, right.
No, we don't. Okay. It looked like he did. He was making motions over here.
No.
It's okay. That question you had was, when you think about it, transporting eggs could be from animals who wade in the water, like moose and deer and a beaver.
Right.
Because these eggs, some of these eggs, especially on like pickerel who lay these strings of eggs, long strings that are sticky, in the weed.
Yeah, like yellow perch do. I know we used
yellow
to...
perch do. There's another one.
Yeah.
Yellow perch, white perch.
And
some other species, as well as a lot of baits like sticklebacks and white nine spine and three spine sticklebacks, which is very popular bait. And a lot of these ponds, they get transported around, as well as these other small baits. And that's, as well as game fish. Game fish may be a little harder, but you take smelts that run up a brook. And if somebody runs across that brook and goes to the next pond and dumps his oars right in there you go. So it could happen.
I know. I've known about it for years because when they reclaimed the trout ponds around Mount Vernon, years, back in the 60s and stuff when they could do that, the bait fish and stuff would be back in no time. You know, like a couple of years, you'd see sunfish again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember asking about that, a biologist, and they said, oh, that's because the birds transport. There was nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, well.
So I've known that for years, but I was surprised that you guys hadn't heard about it. And then
Never heard about it. No, never thought about it.
Yeah, those little fish were all around that pond. When it went dry, there was even crawdads down there.
Crawfish. They get everywhere, those things.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, crawfish.
Anyways.
Trout love crawfish.
In that picture, you can see two or three fish.
Big trout eat crawfish.
Yep.
Big trout. They,
oh, I know.
They're right on a bottom. They just gobble them right up. It's a great bait for a big trout. If you're in a beaver floor just sometime, or a pond, fish it right near the bottom. You want to get a big trout.
We used to use those in basin ponds, a reclaimed trout pond in Mount Vernon, and it's full of crayfish. And we used to use crayfish flies, drag the bottom with them.
Oh, yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much for calling. That was a great answer at the time, as I recall. Great question with an answer. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Nice
that
to talk
an
to
answer,
you.
And yesterday was, and this was a comment.
Okay. All righty.
I'll send you that picture.
I appreciate it. I look forward to it.
Yeah, we had.
Talk to you, Bob.
Have a nice night.
Yes, Bob. I had a caller that wanted me to make a comment. He didn't want to go in the air, but he said the Allegash Falls is stopping the muskie from going up into the Allegash chain. And he's worried about it.
That's correct.
Hoping that what has happened to this guy's pond that they don't get above it.
Well, the thing is with the Allegash Falls, if you've ever been there,
they're
not that high.
Yeah.
So if you had a springtime where you had a lot of runoff, there's always that concern that they could make it up. I mean, I'd like to think they won't.
Right.
But I wouldn't bank on it because, like I said, they're not huge falls. So, but if the hopes is that they will keep them out of the rest of the river, otherwise they'd cover miles upon miles of river beyond that.
Yeah. And they spawn in the spring. All that pickerel chain.
Yeah.
Well, pickerel and northerns and muscalounes are all the same.
Well, Allegash River below the falls, the fishery for trout has pretty much been decimated.
Yeah, he said he's caught them right at the falls in the pool below the falls. He's caught muskie there.
Correct.
No kidding. Wow.
Right. You can catch them there but I know like a guy who used to take scouts on the river quite a bit, and he was saying they always looked forward to this huge pool about a mile and a half, 2 miles below the falls, and they used to camp there with the scouts, and there was like a couple streams coming into the river there, and they said, great place for trout.
Yeah.
And now it's a great place for muskies.
It's gone.
It's a great place for muskies.
They would clean
the trout. They clean it out.
They would clean them.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. So I think time is this is a great time for our commercial, don't you,
Norman? Yes, it is. We're talking about General Appliance and Brewer. It's the place to go for your camp appliance needs. They have gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, and the top-of-the-line compost toilet.
Right, they certainly do. Right away, baby.
Thank you, Scotty. And General Appliance is at 91 Center Street in Brewer. And they're your non-electric connection. It's a family-owned business owned by Al Alkins, and the business has been there since, I guess, the 1920s. It's been a long time. And so if you need any kind of non-electric appliances, he is definitely your resource. And also, he's a great resource for if you have anything that you're having problems with. He's a wealth of information, more than happy to help you.
Yeah.
I've utilized his services in the past. I'm really impressed.
You've been in there.
Oh, yeah, I've been there. Yep. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a breath of fresh air when you, you know, your box stores sell a lot of stuff, which is good. Yep. But you can't walk in and say, well, I got a problem with my machine. How do you fix it? You know, how do you fix my stove? And Al can do that. So it's a huge plus. He's a great resource. He's local, highly recommended. He's been sponsoring our show here for a long time.
Yeah, over 20 years.
Okay. So we're more than happy to help him along.
They said, he told me one day, it's the only one I really need is you guys. I thought that was quite nice.
Yeah, so if you need anything like that, please contact Al. He'll gladly help you.
Easy to get to, cross the old Bangor Brewer Bridge, take a right and a left onto Center Street, and they got practically the whole block there on the right. Yeah, easy to find. And they also sell Paul's books over there and my books over there. I got a big rack full of really great outdoor books over there. And so now we'll get back to Norman Plord, who was our guest tonight. And he's usually at the control helm along with Scotty. They kind of rotate these days. And you come from a big family.
I do. We were 11 kids.
11 kids? Boy, they don't do that anymore, do they?
No. And we didn't even live on a farm, so.
No farm either.
Usually you saw those large families on farms because if you have a farm, it's
good. Well, yeah,
they need help. They need the farm hands, you know.
Yeah, peen pickers and potato pickers and all this stuff.
Well, I did pick potatoes. So.
You did?
Well,
I did one time.
Yeah, I could see the fall coming, and I go, oh no, potato picking. But that was how we dressed ourselves. You know, we would pick potatoes, and the money we made, first order of business was to dress ourselves for the year.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
And whatever was left, we would put in our savings. And we usually had the ability to buy something, you know, something special. And
wow.
I remember one year backpacks for school kids was becoming a really big deal. Mm-hmm. So I went out and bought myself a backpack. Mm-hmm. But that was pretty much the life, you know, in the San Juan Valley is we did a lot of stuff outdoors.
Did a lot of fishing and hunting.
A lot of fishing, a lot of hunting.
When did you get drafted?
I didn't get drafted.
Oh,
I
you
enlisted.
Joined.
I enlisted. I was
enlisted.
I was young. I was 17 years old.
No fooling. 17.
Yeah, my father had to sign, and he was not too crazy about that because he thought he was gonna sign me on board, and that would be my death warrant. You know, going to Vietnam, and so I promised him that I would do my best not to go. And fortunately, I had the scores, and so after I was done with my, at 17, when somebody says be a combat medic, hey, that sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Until you go through combat medic school and you go, oh my God, this is pretty serious.
Yeah.
And then, but I was able to pick up the another school in orthotics and prosthetics, and that was my career.
Great. That was wonderful for a lot of servicemen pick up a career.
It was my goal when I joined the military because
how long were you in?
I just did 3 years.
3 years?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But when
that was enough to get a good career.
Well, it was. And that was that was my main goal. So I was able to.
Oh, Paul, are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm calling you, Bob, from Moab, Utah. Just got here.
No.
Sorry,
kidding. Well, it's great to hear that wonderful voice you have. How could anyone miss that voice?
It's a little full of dust right now. I might have to have
Dusty area, is it?
do a little gargling.
Well, I understand from Scotty.
Do a little gargling with some molten golden. Hey, it's beautiful out here, you guys. It's just absolutely breathtaking. You won't believe the rock formations out here. Take your breath away. It's just gorgeous.
Have you tried streaming the show?
No, I'm talking to you live.
Oh, no, but you haven't tried it yet. We had a caller that was streaming, picked us up streaming.
No, I've been too busy, Bob, setting up camp.
Oh, I realize that. I thought you might like to hear that we had a caller that picked us up
streaming. Oh, that's good. That's
streaming. That was really good. No, yeah. So I had breakfast with Scotty and Karen this morning, Alice and I, and he produced your travelogue.
my travel videos.
Reynolds Travelogue.
I've been sending the family every day. I send the family a little, 20-second, 30-second video. It took us 6 days to get out here. We left Tuesday morning and stayed at state park grounds on the way out and had a very good trip. No close shaves on the highway, except Chicago was a little dicey getting through all the traffic. But once you get beyond Chicago, it's wide open. Speed limit 80 miles an hour.
No fooling.
Of course, Diane drove the whole way, Bob.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you got to dodge some people, I would imagine. Yeah. Well, how many lanes you got for 80 miles an hour?
Yeah.
Three or four lanes?
A lot of guys fishing. A lot of people fishing on the Colorado River.
Oh, yeah.
Central Colorado and also the Eagle River.
I think you mentioned that it was 37 there the other morning?
Yes, it was in central Colorado last night. It was 37.
Boy, oh, boy.
We woke up to heavy fog this morning, but it's beautiful now. It was 88 here in
Ohio. Oh, it went up fast. And
yeah, it's a nice dry heat out here, though. It's not as bad as you might think. Anyway, I just wanted to call in, say hi to you, and and I'll try to report in again maybe in a week if I can.
Yeah, well, I won't be here, but I'm sure somebody, I know Norman probably is on the control room next week. He's scheduled.
Yeah.
So you can talk to Norman, and I have no idea who the guest is or who is doing the show. Could be Jim Thorne.
Jim Thorne is the host.
Okay.
Jim Thorne is host next week, and after that, the following week, it's Greg Burr.
Greg Burr, okay.
Yep.
Okay, and by that time, I'll be in Grand Lake Stream for a week or 10 days, so I won't be around.
You lucky guy. Good luck at Grand Lake. I hope you catch the big one there where you fish.
Scotty's coming.
Yeah, I heard he is. That's great.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was nice to talk to you. Nice to hear that golden voice again.
Okay, give Alice a hug for me.
I certainly will, and give Di a hug for me.
Will do. And, we'll see you in a week, maybe. Take care.
Okay, keep us updated. Appreciate it. Thank you so much, Paul.
Bye-bye.
Now back to Norman. Let's talk a little bit about Grand Lake Stream, Norman.
Grand Lake Stream, yes.
You're a regular at Grand Lake Stream. You're the scourge of Grand Lake Stream.
I can blame you for that. When we started flight time.
But you don't come in until way after dark. You're down there. Hey, well, Norman, you out there, Norman?
Well, the crowds leave. That's the bonus. But no, I started fishing Grand Lake. I used to hear about it for years, and then when we were doing the fly tying at the church for quite a few years, I remember the first year we did it, you said, well, we're learning how to tie all these flies. We got to use these things. So let's go to Grand Lake Stream. And for about 4 or 5 years, we were bringing 30 people on our trip.
Yes.
That was impressive.
Yes, we were.
Yeah. So that was pretty good. We'd take over several cabins.
You mean the Woolly Buggers?
No.
This is not the Woolly Buggers.
This
is before the Woolly Buggers.
This was before when we were fly tying.
Yes.
And
you
said, we're learning to tie these flies. We got to use them,
Yeah.
And a lot of the people had never fly fish before. And of course, we were teaching all beginners, for fly tying pretty much. So it was a great idea. We tie these flies. Let's go use them. So we went to Grand Lake Stream, and I've been going there since. So it's been quite a few years.
Back then, L.L. Bean was very kind to loan us some equipment, some fly rods that we used.
Yeah.
And they gave us a really good price on some if you wanted to buy them.
Yeah.
And that was awfully nice of them to do.
Well, it was also Terrio Flies, Alvin Terrio.
Yep.
We would do a field trip to Alvin up in the Patton
area.
Yes, we
did, yes.
And he was really good, very informative, and he gave everybody, without asking or even inquiring, he gave us a break on the stuff we were buying.
Yes, I recall. That's right.
Yeah, I was really impressed.
Was it 20% off or something?
No, it was 10, I believe. But it was something he didn't have to do.
No.
And
he's still raising jungle cock up there?
Hybrid, yeah.
Hybrid
as
jungle
far
cock.
As I know. As far as I know, he is. Yeah. Yeah, he learned the hard way that if you're trying to raise jungle cock, you can't tell the people you're buying the bird from that you're going to use it for flies. he was telling me that was his mistake when he first did it. He told them that he was going to use this. I don't know if they asked him, but he said, well, yeah, I'm going to raise these birds and going to use them for fly tying. And
what's your favorite fly at Grand Lake Stream?
For me, it's the Black Ghost.
Black Ghost. When do you use the Black Ghost?
At night, primarily. I use it during the day, too, but it's been my go-to fly at night. I just...
Got a white wing and a black body.
Black body, basically. Yeah, with silver tinsel and yellow tail, yellow throat. Yeah, it's very popular fly. It's been around a long time, but for me, it's been really good at Grand Lake Stream. If I fish it in the evening...
I should fish it more often. I've been fishing these golden retrievers and... Yeah. Band specials, you know.
Been fishing the Black Ghost for quite a few years now. In the evening, during the day, I'll throw out.
Towards the evening, it's the best time. Yeah,
I'll throw out all kinds of things. But I learned one thing: you can always learn something. This year, I was using my last night there. I was using the Black Ghost, and I just couldn't catch a fish. I couldn't believe it. I said, my fly is giving up on me. You know.
Yeah.
And a couple of my friends caught salmon at the same time, and I said, "Hey, what you guys using?" And he said, "Oh," and I looked, and it was, they were using the Black Ghost. I says, "How are you fishing this thing?" And they said, "Strip it in as fast as you can."
Right.
And I said, "Thank you for the tip."
They'll catch it.
I think it was my second cast.
Just strip it in. I mean, so fast, you know.
It was a blast.
Well, I think we've come to the end of the show here tonight, and I hope you've been you listeners have stuck with us and appreciate it. And next week, I think Jim Thorne will be here. And until then, this is the Maine Outdoors.